We are on Chaf Ches Amar Aleph at the top. We're, I don't want to say in the middle of a story, but we had just mentioned the story that Rabbi Eliezer was visiting Yochanan Rabbi Loi, and he was in his sukkah, and Rabbi Yochanan wanted to know if he'd be allowed to spread a sheet on top because of the sun. So they were asked all kinds of questions about that. The bottom line of the story was that Rabbi Eliezer didn't really respond to him. Instead, he started talking about something random. And the Gemara is, I guess, bothered by what's going on with Rabbi Eliezer over there. And the bottom line of it is that Rabbi Eliezer never said over a halacha that he hadn't heard directly from his Rebbeim, from his Rebbe. So the Gemara says like this, Tanu Rabbanan, my said Rabbi Eliezer, there was another incident that happened. Rabbi Eliezer, Shabbos beGalil HaElyon, that he was for Shabbos in the Upper Galilee, v'shalu shloishim halachos b'hilchos sukkah. And the people there asked him 30 halachas in the halachas of sukkah. 12 amar lehem shamati. 12 of them, he told them, I have heard the answer to this, and assumingly told them the answer. 18 amar lehem lo shamati. I never heard. Rabbi Yehuda omer chiluf advarim. Rabbi Yehuda said it was the opposite numbers. 18 amar lehem shamati. 18 he said I heard. 12 amar lo shamati. 12 he said I didn't hear. Okay, either way, amar lo. So they said to him, "Kol devarecha einan ela mipi hashmua." All of your words are only something that you heard, you know, directly. In other words, seemingly the Maisa Shahaya seems to have been that he said, "I never heard the answer to that question." Okay, so what do we do? You don't say anything you never heard. I mean, so work it out. You know, work it out. What's the answer? Amalahams, he said to them, Iskatuni Lama Davar, Shalai Shamati Mipi Rabbisai, you're trying to make me say something that I never heard from the mouth of my Rebbeim. Miomai. So then he goes on to say all of the things that he holds, these are his, so to speak, his shitos. These are the way in which he lives, and these are the principles from which he doesn't deviate. Miomai, in all of my days, like Dmani Adam Babes Hamedrish, no one ever got to the Beis Medrash before me. I was always the first one there. And I never slept in the Beis Medrash, Lashinas Keva, Lashinas Arai. Not a sleep, and not even a nap. No, I don't know if you saw any of these pictures or read any articles about Rav Steinman, Zichron Libracha, but they had a picture of his shtender. Did you see this? See, he had an old shtender, and you know what his chair looked like? Did you see it? It was a stool. It was a stool, but the stool was raised up above the ground by either another stool or something else so that his feet wouldn't reach the ground. So whenever he would learn, he would sit on this wooden stool that was above, too high for him, so his feet were dangling like a little gib, and he would learn at this wooden shtender. Why in the world did he do that? So he wouldn't fall asleep. Because the best way to fall asleep is the way that I like to learn, which is leaning, and then you fall asleep. So that's why I shouldn't do that. Unbelievable. So he never fell asleep in the Beis Medrash, Rabbi Eliezer. Not a regular sleep, not even a nap. I never left anyone in the Beis Medrash and I would leave. I never had any unnecessary conversations. Rashi writes, Sichas Chulen, Divrei Havai V'schoik. You know, stam jokes, things like that. Rashi explains the whole thing in general. But that's what Sichas Chulin seems to mean. Rashi says it doesn't mean he never, you know, spoke to anybody about anything that was not Torah. It means to say that he never made jokes or things that, of that nature. And I never, ever said anything that I didn't hear from my Rebbe. So that's the end of that particular story, but those were the shitos of Rabbi Eliezer. That's the way that he lived his life. Amru Alav or Yochanan ben Zakkai. Now, Rabbi Eliezer was a Talmud, as we'll see, of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who in turn was a Talmud of the famous Hillel HaZaken, as we'll see. So just, you know, keep that in mind. These are the personalities that we're talking about over here. We're talking about Hillel, at a Talmud, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and of course, that he's famous for what, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Anybody know? For what? That's the understanding of Menuziel. But Yochanan ben Zakkai, something to do with Beis HaMikdash or something? No. that the Gemara in Gittin talks about when the Beis HaMikdash was besieged and about to be destroyed.
He was laughing.
He was one that snuck out to speak with Vespasian, and he requested Yavne v'chachameha. He requested certain things, and one of the things he did not request was the Beis HaMikdash. And to the end of his life, he wasn't sure if he made the right decision or the wrong decision, and he was afraid that perhaps he should have asked for the Beis HaMikdash to be spared. But his opinion at the time was that tafasta meruba lo tafasta. You ask for too much, you're not going to get it. So he felt that he would end up with nothing if he asked for the Beis HaMikdash. He would just be disregarded, and that'd be the end of that. But in any case,
he's staying like a coffin or something.
Yeah, there was a whole ma'isa that he, the, as usual, right? There was the gedolei hador, and then the losers that think that they know better. So there were a bunch of individuals who were, you know, the young whippersnappers, and they decided that they know better than the gedolim, and so they had a whole faction that was against the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and what they thought they should do. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was of the opinion that they should surrender, and everyone else is of the opinion they should fight to the death. And we'll defend Yerushalayim, and we'll fight. So, you know, this wasn't going well. Everybody was starving in Yerushalayim. It was not good. It was not a good situation. So eventually, they decided they have to sneak out Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. But how are they going to get Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to speak to this? How are they going to sneak him out? So they decided they were going to make it look like he died. So he was very old, and he, I don't know, maybe he was even sick. So word got out that he was sick, you know, whatever. And then they got some sort of dead animal, whatever it was, stuck in a bed with him, so it smelled like he was actually, his corpse was rotting. And then they put him in a coffin. And on the way out, so these fellows that, you know, are always suspecting, who knows what trick is up, is anybody's sleeve? Well, we just want to make sure that he's dead, you know, so we're just going to put a knife through it. Just, you know, so that's obvious that that he's dead. What? Then everyone's going to say they stabbed their gedolim. This is ridiculous. You can't do that. Well, we'll just shake it around a little bit, you know. Come on, you can't, this, you know. Anyway, so they convinced them not to do anything to the coffin. And then they snuck the coffin out, ostensibly to bury him. And instead, they brought him to Vespasian. That's when they had this whole conversation. But in any case, so Amru Alav al Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, they said about the Rebbe of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, miyam av leisach zichas chulin. His whole, all of his days, he never had a sicha, schula, in a conversation that was jokes and whatnot, like Rabbi Eliezer. He didn't walk 4 amis if he wasn't learning and without tefillin. No one ever was arrived earlier than him to the Beis Medrash. And he never slept in the Beis Medrash, not asleep and not a nap. It sounds familiar, right? In other words, the point is that this was the Masur of Rabbi Eliezer. He wanted to carry on most of these traditions from his Rebbe. But like here, when he was on the Tunafais, he never thought about Torah when he was in a Mavui, right? Those alleyways. That was Matunaf. Matunaf means dirty. There was excrement and garbage and things that are spoiled. So it's not appropriate even to think Torah thoughts when you're in one of those places. But like, he niach Adam v'samedrish v'yatza. He never left when there was anyone still in the Beis Medrash. No one ever found him sitting and doing nothing. He was sitting and he was learning. And no one ever opened a door for his students except for him himself. I thought this was fascinating. That, so obviously it doesn't mean that he chased around his Talmidim all day to open doors for them. It means to say, assumingly, in the Beis Medrash, he probably had some sort of house or whatever that was his Beis Medrash. I'm sure there weren't hundreds of Talmidim, but I'm sure he had a significant number. And we'll see a little bit. And he probably, when they would knock on the door to come in the morning, or there was a certain time they were supposed to arrive, whatever it is, he would open the door himself. What do you think is the pshat? I mean, that was just like a relationship thing, or it was, I care about you, or part and parcel of education. I don't know, it's an interesting thing to ponder. He also never said anything that he didn't hear from his Rebbe, ever. And he never made an announcement, oh, it's time to leave the Beis Medrash. No such thing as time to leave the Beis Medrash. He never said such a thing, except for 2 times a year, Erev Pesach and Erev Yom Kippur. Why Erev Pesach and Erev Yom Kippur you stop learning? What's the pshat? Zokt Rashi, chutz mi arvei psachim, 5 lines down from the top, mipnei asiyas pischeim, because number one, they had to get to work on the Korban Pesach. They had to get to work on the Korban Pesach. Yeah, when? When there was a Beis HaMikdash. But remember, we just said a Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the one that was alive when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So what is that? So what, this was only before when the Beis HaMikdash was standing? So Rashi writes, assumingly this is what Rashi is bothered by. So he says, number one, when there was a Beis HaMikdash, Mipnei Asiyas HaTfis Chayim. Number two, Umipnei HaTinoikos Shalishanu. And so that the kids won't go to sleep. You heard this before? Oh, never mind. So the kids won't go to sleep. What do you mean? The kids won't go to sleep. What? We're afraid the kids are going to fall asleep at the Seder. We're afraid the kids are going to fall asleep, so they have to take naps. Well, the mother can't get them to take naps. She's busy cooking for the Pesach. So they would go home and make sure the children took naps.
So interesting.
Like,
seriously, why?
Yeah. Believe it or not. I mean, that's not a joke. In other words, think of it. Think it through. So here you have a person that the entire year never left the basement, never said it's time to stop learning. Like, he went home, you know, at night, or maybe for dinner, or whatever it was. But he was learning. So, come on. So, Erev Pesach has got to give the kids and put the kids down for a nap? I mean, what is going on over here? So, what does this tell you? This tells you something that perhaps you don't really appreciate enough. That the night of the Seder is the most important time of year for the children. It's the most important night of the year. And we have to think about that. We have to relate to it that way. And whatever, we've got all kinds of problems with the schools because they have to come home with booklets. And then, I mean, there are all kinds of issues that you got to negotiate around. But Seder night is a very, very special time. I'm sure you all remember, you know, Seder night, how important it is to you and the songs and everything that you probably picked up and learned. But it's important that it be geared for the children and it be something that is really used as an educational tool. Those of you that were here last semester, so you remember, we spent a lot of time on this. And we spoke about, I stress this again and again. You take a look at the Rambam, you take a look at the sources, and it's not a recital. You're not supposed to say over the Haggadah, blah, 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 blah. This is supposed to be the real education. And if you want an educational model, take a look at the Seder. There's visual aids. There is question and answer. There is story. I mean, this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaching us how to teach. This is the model for education. So this is just another proof for all of that. That Erev Pesach, the kids had to take a nap. That's how important it was that they be awake for the Seder. And what about Erev Yom Kippur? It's like Rashi, Shetzarech Lechol Miboyon, because you got to eat before it's nighttime. There's also a mitzvah to eat Erev Yom Kippur, right? So you had to eat. V'chein haya Rabbi Eliezer Talmid, I know you got Harav, and so it's still too. That's how Rabbi Eliezer, his student, accustomed himself after him. Tani Rabbanan, Shmoinim Talmidim Hayo Leila Hilla Zakein. Hilla Zakein had 80 Talmidim. Does that number surprise you?
Yeah, it's kind of small.
Rabbi Kiva, you know, 24,000, you know? 80? So, you know, either it means that those were 80 that were like real Talmidim, you know, and there were a lot of others that just weren't really considered Talmidim or something like that, or in a Hanami. He really had 80 Talmidim. These were people that carried on the Masorah. These were people that, we're not talking about, yeah, they took Hillel for, you know, 4 semesters in NYU. We're talking about that they were Talmidim of his. They absorbed his Torah and were able to give it over to the next generation. Can you imagine learning by someone long enough that you can give it over to the next generation? I mean, that's what it means, that he had 80 Talmidim. But in any case, 30 of them were ra'ui, that the Shechina should rest upon them like Moshe Rabbeinu. And there's some discussion what exactly that means. Meaning, is this lower than Nevuah? I mean, they didn't have Nevuah, right? Meaning, they would have had Nevuah had they been alive in the times of Beis HaMikdash. Like, what exactly does that mean? But obviously, it does mean that they were very holy. And 30 of them were appropriate that the sun should stand still like Yehoshua, like it did for Yehoshua ben Nun. And there's a point out that there's a midrash that said it stood still for Moshe Rabbeinu. So why not say like Moshe Rabbeinu's sun stood still for him? Is this because they're students and not Rebbeim? I mean, what exactly is so? There's a lot of discussion what exactly the nuances are to all of this. So far we've accounted for 60 out of the 80. Esrim and the other 20, Beinoinim, or you know, in the middle. In the middle of what? In the middle of those two? Or meaning in the middle, meaning on the third level that's even lower than those two?
When it says the 30 that the Shekhinah could rest on them, similar to Moshe Rabbeinu, is that saying that by like Yeshua, the sun will for sure stay in the sky for them? Or is it like overlapping?
So that's a question of what exactly is the nuance. Like, what's it trying to depict? It's trying to depict that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does a nes for them? Like, why? Like, what is... Right. That we have to work on. What's the nakuda? Like, what are you trying to say? Trying to say they're very holy? That's it? They're very special? Okay, they're very special. But obviously the Gemara is trying to say something, and those Mefarshim and Ben Yehoyada and whatever that deal with these types of things, they try to get at the nuance that's being pointed out in the Gemara. And the difference between the two, and which one's bitter, which one's worse, is it greater than one Yehoshua than Moshe? Because it's just Ashras Hashchina, but this the sun stood still for them? And is that actually higher? That's lower? Like, what exactly does all of this mean? And then the Beinanim, are they lower? They're just like middle of the road guys? Or meaning they're in between those two? But in any case, so those are the 80, whatever all these things mean. Gadol Shebekulan, the greatest of those 80 Talmidim of Hillel Azakein, Yonis and Ben Uziel. Where did Yehuda go? Yonis and Ben Uziel, right? That's the famous Amuka. That's the one that never got married and just learned and learned and learned and learned. He was the greatest of the Talmidim of Hillel. Katan Shebekulan, the, so to speak, smallest of all of them, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, was the one that we've been discussing, the Heiliger Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. He was considered... The lowest out of all of them.
Why do they call someone after being the lowest?
They want you to understand how great they are.
These are heavyweights right here.
Yeah.
You know, because he's such a great, Britney, whatever, and because he's the lowest of, this group shows how high,
Yeah, listen to the Gemara, listen to this. That's exactly the point of the Gemara. Listen, Amru Alav Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, it was said upon him, on Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, Shalai Hiniach Mikra, Umishna, Gemara, Halachis, Vagadis, Tikduki Torah, Vitikduke Seifrim, Kalim Mechamurim, Gezer Shavis, Tukuvois, Ugamatrias, Sichas Malachayasharis, Sichas Shadim, Sichas Tikalim, Mishalis Kaibsin, Mishalis Shualim, Davar Gadol, Davar Katan. He knew all of the things that we're about to list. He never put any of this aside, meaning he had covered all of this completely. What are all of these things? So the list is Mikra. What's Mikra?
Torah.
Chumash, basically, maybe Aleph Tanakh. Mishnah. Okay, the basic Torah Shebaal Peh, Gemara. Right, so Bab Mishnah weren't written yet.
So Torah Shebaal Peh.
But that's Mishnah.
More in depth.
So I have pointed this out to you in the past, and this is important to realize for ourselves, for our children, for any school you might be involved in. There is a very important difference between Mishnah and Talmud. Mishnah is meant to be memorized. It's a basic corpus of Torah Shebaal Peh. That's the material that you gotta know. Gemara technically, Talmud technically, means understanding those Mishnayos, because there are a lot of contradictions, there are a lot of missing information, there's a lot of things you're not going to understand, there's a lot of application that's necessary, and all of that, what we'll call the Shakovataria, that discussion about the Mishnayos that make them into something that makes sense, all of that is called Talmud. The Talmud existed way before the Gemara existed, because it's called Talmud. What we have in the Gemara is our form of Talmud from which we pasken halacha. Before the Gemara was written down, theoretically, there could have been a lot of discussions about what exactly the Mishnayos meant and what we should say, what's the difference between this and that, how to categorize this and that and the other thing. There are all kinds of conversations. But because those conversations have been basically codified into our version of the Gemara, that's how we are forced to learn the Gemara. Yeah? So one consequence of this is that we're bound by those conversations. We can't just have our own anymore. That's one point. The other point is, please realize, that the Gemara is not meant to be learned like a Mishnah. Did everyone hear that? The Gemara is not meant to be learned like a Mishnah. Why? How do you learn a Mishnah? A Mishnah means it's a piece of information. You just get the information. You have it in your pocket. That's what it says. Right? That's called basically Daf Yomi. That's not how you're supposed to learn. That's not what Gemara is. What Gemara is a shakavatari of an understanding about why does it say it like that, and what about this, and what about this, and what about this, and all of those conversations that, as Albert said, deepen our understanding of the Mishnayos and clarify all of that. That's called Gemara. So if you read a Gemara and you just have a piece of information, like, okay, that's what it says. You know, this is a question, there's an answer, there's a question, there's an answer. Okay, that's what it is. You're not yet really learning Gemara. Learning Gemara means there's a kasha here that bothers you, and you're like, that doesn't make any sense. And then there's an answer, like, oh, I got it. And then you ask a question on the answer, and then you have Tosis, and you have Rashi, and you have the Rishonim, and you have... And that conversation is what we call Talmud. It's a fight. It's a milchamta shel Torah. It's a fight. Until you're in the fight, you're treating your Gemara like it's a Mishnah. Mishnah is not meant to be memorized and just learned like a piece of information. Gemara is, okay, we're stuck with it because that's how we have to paskin, because whatever, that's the world we live in. But you have to get into it. You have to be in the Gemara. You have to feel the Kasha, and you have to be giving the Teretz. And until you feel it, you're not yet in Gemara. That's why it existed before the Gemara existed. Because it doesn't mean memorization of a bunch of texts. That's Mishnayos. That's not Gemara. So he had Mishnah down. He understood everything. He had all the Gemara down before it was ever written. Halachis. What do you think halachis means then?
So
I would say applications. You see what Rashi says? Halach l'moshim yisinai. The conclusions you come to from your Gemara, that's included in Gemara. That's what Rashi says. Halachis here means halach l'moshim yisinai. But agadis. What's agadis? Agadis means all of the secrets of the Torah in a certain sense. Meaning all of the legends, all of the ways that things are presented in a very midrashic way. So that's what's called agadis. All the legends and things like that have lessons in and of themselves in their own way. Dikduke Torah. What are dikduke Torah? Rashi says, Ribuye oisiyos shebayin lidroish bahen ribuye mumi'utim. Sometimes you have letters that are significant because they include something, or significant because they exclude something. So that involves the extrapolation from Chumash itself. Dikduke Soifrim. What are Dikduke Soifrim? Well, who are Soifrim? So Rashi says Soifrim means the Rabbanim. Shehoisifu ledakdek achar maise habriyos. Dikduk means what, literally? Exactitude. Yeah? That precision. Ledakdek means to be precise. That's funny because people call it dikduk, and people that are really involved in dikduk say, it's called dikduk. You have to be precise. You have to be medakdek with your dikduk. So that's what it means. It means to be exacting. So dikduke Torah means to be exacting in every single letter of the Torah because something's included, something's excluded. What are dikduke Soifrim? So you might have thought it means, well, Soifrim are the people that write the Sefer Torah, so it means the same thing as dikduke Torah, which would be wrong. The Rashi says dikduke Soifrim means, and it's a little bit, almost a metaphor, and it means the dinim derabanan. Dinim derabanan. How do you get the dinim derabanan from dikduke Soifrim? Because Rabbanan are also called Soifrim, for whatever, for various reasons. So dikduke Soifrim, Zokt Rashi, means that the Chazal were very exacting in the behaviors of men. And therefore they came up with all sorts of rules to deal with the behaviors of men. A fascinating interpretation. Rashi says, Shohisifu, they additionally added on ledakdek to be exacting, achar mais abrios, after the behaviors of men. Ulahachmir, and to be strict, velasas siyag, v'znaim l'Torah, to make fences and handles for the Torah. V'gazu gzeirois, aharchiges ha'adam min aveira. They made all kinds of decrees to distance a person from doing an avera, and he gives whatever example. Okay. Kalim v'chamurim. What do you think kalim v'chamurim means? Kal v'chamurim. Gzeir shavas. What is a gzeir shava? When the same word or phrase appears in two different places, and it's really not necessary, so it teaches you to connect it to the same word or phrase in another place, right? Tekufais? What are tekufais?
Does that mean change?
Yeah, it means like seasons, right? Yeah, like a tekufa, a certain time period or season. So Rashi writes, tekufais, cheshboin hiluchama ulavana. Astronomical calculations. The calculations of the sun and the moon. That's very critical. Especially if you don't have Sanhedrin anymore, you got to know the months or whatever. But that was very critical. Even when Sanhedrin was around and they were accepting Eidos on the new moon, they also did all these calculations to know when they could anticipate the moon and when to anticipate the sun's schedule as well, for various, for season-wise, and also for Birchas HaChama. In any case, he was an expert in that, astronomical calculations. Gematrias. Gematrias. What are gematrias? If you want to see very quickly, take a look at this Rashi. Rashi here delineates some forms of gematria. Devarim halumdim b'lashin gematria. Things that are learned out in the language of gematria kagoyim. Shashach. Shashach. When the pasuk in Yirmiyahu refers to Shashach, it refers to Bavel be'atbash. You guys familiar with atbash? The gematria we're all familiar with is just each letter is corresponds to a number. Atbash means each letter corresponds to the opposite letter in the aleph base. Atbash gardak. Aleph is saf.
Okay.
Atbash gar dak.
Oh, that's what.
So shashach. So shashach is bavel. That's a fascinating form of gematria. Has its own implications. Which is an atbash here. And then Rashi has another one. Do you see it a few lines on Rashi? It says, Ba'atbach. This is a gematria most people are not familiar with. Atbach means that you take letters that add up to 10 and they switch. So Aleph and Tes switch. And Beis and Ches switch. Because they add up to 10 together. And you have all kinds of fascinating things.
The first 10 letters. The first 9 letters. Because anything above... Yeah,
there's a whole bunch that works out. I forgot.
20, then 30.
Yeah. It's a whole thing. Then the hundreds will go together, and then the thousands, I think, also go together. Yeah, fascinating thing. V'chein lefi minyan ha'osios. Like, we're used to, you know, something that have to do with the letters themselves, and then you have other things, others suggest roshei tevos. This is the Rashbam. Okay, in any case, but gematrias, there's more than one kind of gematria. FYI, there are many forms of gematria. That's why it doesn't say gematria, it is gematrios, which doesn't mean because there's a lot of gematrias, it means a lot of forms of gematria, and he was an expert in all of that.
Has that ever, switching that, gematria?
The whole
thing. Stam, just how much, not adding anything to it, just
you mean everything in Atbash?
Yes, everything in Atbash.
I like a lot of it would be nonsense. I think it's only certain things. I don't know. As far as I know, I'm not, but I have no idea. Sichas Malachi Ashares, the conversations of the Malachim. Vesichas Shadim, and the conversations of the demons. Vesichas Tikalim, and the conversations of the palm trees. What in the world are these things? Zog Drashi. Sichas Malachi Ashares, Sichas Shadim, Sichas Tikalim, Lo Yadana Maihi. I don't know what it is.
Wow.
Now, others didn't seem to have the suffix of Rashi and make suggestions, and they say Rabbi Eliezer understood the conversations of the Malachim. Rabbi Eliezer understood the conversations of the Shadim. Rabbi Eliezer understood that if you have a tree and it's shielded from the wind and it shakes and moves in certain ways, that it means certain things. And Rabbi Eliezer understood the movements, the natural movements of the trees.
What does that mean?
Don't you want to know?
I just sounds that kind of weird.
So Rashi says, I don't know what it is, and others have other suggestions. Mishalais Kaifsin, he had Mishalim, or he knew all of the Mishalim that other people gave, or his own. Of Kovsin. What are Kovsin? Wanderers. I guess that was a popular way to say Mishalim back then. I'm not sure. Mishalim Shuelim. Mishalim of foxes or weasels. Davar Gadol Davar Katan. Great things and small things. What does that mean? He never put down great things and small things. He knew all of them. What does it mean? Davar Gadol. The great things, the big things. Maisa Merkava. Were the, what's called the Maisa Merkava. Anybody know what that means? Maisa Merkava? So, Rashi says what? Nothing. Rashi says nothing. I guess it's too obvious for him to comment on. So there are two different explanations of this, basically. Maybe three. One possibility is Ma'aseh Merkava just means Yechezkel, as Menachem said. In Yechezkel, we know that there's a description of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Merkava, his chariot, his throne, whatever you want to call it. So, okay. The other way to look at it is that it means deeper than that. It means Kabbalah. Ma'aseh Merkava refers to Kabbalah. Because Kabbalah is based on Ma'aseh Merkava. It doesn't just mean certain insights into the Merkava itself, but he knew all of Kabbalah. The Rambam seems to describe Ma'aseh Merkava as something that has to do with philosophy. And the Ritva has a very sharp, or maybe you want to call it harsh, comment about this. Let's find the quote over here. When the Ritva is finished explaining something else that we'll see in a minute, so he says that there's something called Davar Gadol and there's something called Davar Katan, and well, Gadol whom we call Chachmas Agayim, and even when we see something that's called a Davar Katan, it's greater than all of the other wisdoms that you'll find that are out there. V'siyim, the Ritva writes in the end, Zeh Perish Emes Menachon Achol HaMamin, when it comes to the Maisa Merkava, it refers to Kabbalah and whatnot. And then he says, "V'loy k'moyish pirshu acherim, not as others have explained, ha'elikim yichaper, God should forgive." So everybody points out that the Ritva was referring to the Rambam, that the Rambam refers to Ma'aseh Merkava as philosophical things, and the Ritva felt that that was a total corruption of Ar Masorah, and he doesn't want to, you know, like attack the Rambam any other way, other than saying, you know, listen, the Rambam didn't have Kabbalah or whatever; it's not his fault. But whatever he said was completely incorrect, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should forgive. Wow, huh? Wow. Now, you know there's a famous comment of the Vilna Gaon that the Rambam, who felt that all of these things like Shadim and witchcraft and all these kinds of things is shtus, v'hevel, it doesn't exist, and all of these things, you know, you just kind of write off, and it's not really true. And the Vilna Gaon says his comment on Shulchan Aruch, when the Mechaber quotes that it is mutter to wear certain amulets and whatnot on Shabbos because people think that they work, but they really don't. That is a quote, basically he's getting that from the Shita of the Rambam. And on that passage in Shulchan Aruch, the Gaon writes that this comes from the Rambam, but it's obviously incorrect, that all of these things are true, and that they all happen, and the Rambam was swayed in this regard by philosophy. It doesn't mean that the Gaon didn't hold of the Rambam, as you may know from his quotes all over Shulchan Aruch and everywhere else, where the Rambam is quoted for everything. But when it comes to this particular nuance of Kabbalah and philosophy and whatnot, so then Vilna Gaon writes that basically you cannot trust the Rambam when it comes to these things, because he was swayed by Aristotle. In any case, this is a similar passage in the Ritva. Back to the Gemara. So there's something called Devargadol, Devarkatan. Devargadol means Ma'aseh Merkava, or perhaps Kabbalah, or according to the Rambam, something more philosophical, which obviously was attacked by others. Devarkatan is Havayos Abaye v'Rava. The questions and the discussions of Abaye and Rava. What? Abaye and Rava were generations and generations and generations later. And furthermore, then what's the difference between Gemara and Abaye and Rava?
It's also complimenting.
Also true. Rashi writes, "Havayos ad Abaye v'Rava, kol yibayelu hu l'Abaye v'Rava." All of the later questions of Abaye and Rava later in history, that because they were alive much later, misafkaluhu, he also questioned or had a suffix about all of the same things. V'chula nasan es liba v'nasam hem tam, but he resolved all of that. All the things that Abaye v'Rava were left with as questions, he resolved all of them. But in the times of Amoraim, when Abaye v'Rava came along, they forgot them. So it's different than Gemara, it seems, because the Gemara seems to be all of Shaka V'Tayyar to understand the Gemara and work out the Mishnayos, whereas here seems to be other issues that they had Sveikos about, although it's certainly related. But all of those things he came to conclusions about, but they were forgotten later. The kaiyim mashenemar to fulfill that which is said, the hanchil oyhavai yesh v'itzreiseyam amalei, to give as a heritage to my those who love me, yesh, and their treasure houses amalei I will fill. So what exactly does that mean? What do you mean to fulfill? I give to those who love me, yesh, and their storehouses I will fill. So it seems to be that the Gemara is saying that because Rabbi Eliezer was an oyhev of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he was given things that he didn't necessarily have to work very hard for. In other words, all of these things Rabbi Eliezer knew, so we all kind of look at this and we're like, how did he know all of these things? Like, how did he master all of these things is really the question, right? So the answer is that it was a gift to him by HaKadosh Baruch Hu because of the tremendous love that he had in his heart for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a promise to those people that he will fill their storehouses. He will fill them with all kinds of treasures that they didn't necessarily have to really work for on their own. In this regard, I want to remind you of a famous story about the Chazon Ish. That have you all seen this diagram of the Chazon Ish's brain surgery? I think we spoke about it once in the past. So there was I have secondhand information on the story because my Rebbe Rav Glucksman Zichronim Livracha and his Rebbetzin Zichronim Livracha were in Bnei Brak by the Chazon Ish when this happened, and there was a certain family, a mother, that approached the Chazon Ish. Their son, apparently, Rachmana Litzlan, had some sort of brain tumor. I have the picture here. I want to show it to you. Let me find it. And they went to the Chazon Ish saying, the doctor that we went to said that it is inoperable and there's nothing that we can do. So the Chazon Ish, apparently, and you can see, here it is, you can see the picture. What happened to it? That's weird. I hope this works. I don't know. Maybe something wrong with the picture, but I'll try. Chazon Ish drew a diagram of how to do the surgery, sent it to the doctor with the mother, and said to the doctor, you know, with all due respect, please do the surgery this way, and Mr. Shem will be successful. There might be something on the picture, I thought. I'll have to give it to you another time. And the Kahava, it was successful surgery. You have the picture? It came through?
Yeah, it came through.
Okay, I don't know why it's not working on my phone. Okay, whatever it is. So that is the actual picture. So both Rav Glucksman and Rav Zimlachman told me about this ma'isa, that they knew the doctor involved, and they knew, you know, what had happened. And this was an actual ma'isa shehaya that we have with what he wrote, you know, written and easier to read Hebrew on that page. But that is the actual diagram that he wrote, how to do the brain surgery. How in the world did the Chazon Ish know how to do brain surgery? So Rav Glucksman told me because his sister, Rav Kanievsky, the wife of the stipler, used to read him from medical journals. He apparently didn't either know the language well enough or didn't want to read. I'm not sure exactly when or how that worked exactly, but many people tell you the story that he somehow knew it all through Ruach HaKodesh, but she told me that she knew for a fact that Rebetzin and Kanievsky used to read him from medical journals. The question is that anything less than Ruach HaKodesh anyway? You go ahead and read a medical journal and go do brain surgery, I dare you. So the answer is, I believe this is an expression of this Gemara. This Gemara says that all of the things that Rabbi Eliezer understood is the result of this Havtacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises, L'kayei ma she'nemar, this fulfilled that which it says in the Pasuk, L'hanchil oy hava yesh, to give over as a heritage to those who love me, yesh, all the things that they shouldn't really have the capacity to grasp. V'yitzoseyam amalei, and their storehouses I will fill. So we have people, have had people that are like that. That even though the Chazon Ish didn't go to medical school, but he was able to grasp these things simply by having medical journals being read to him. and he was able to actually draw a diagram for brain surgery on a tumor. If that was all a description of who? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew all of these things. The greatest of them, Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel, how much greater he must have been. Right? That's the whole point. They said about Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel, when he would sit and he would be toiling in the Torah, any bird that would fly above him, miad nisraf, would immediately be burnt up. Why? Why did he burn up the birds? Zokdrashi, shahari malachi asharis miskabtsin sevivav lishmoya de retara mipiv. Because the malachi asharis would gather around him to hear the Torah from his mouth. So according to Rashi, it was the srafim. The srafim, these malachim, they're like a fire. And so they mamash, they burnt up. I left it, you know, the Elisha Hanavi. So when Ahav was after him, so he sent all of his soldiers to go bring Elisha Hanavi to him. He's going to kill him. So all of the soldiers are surrounding the mountain that Elisha Hanavi was on. And his helper, Gehazi, is freaking out. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And Elisha just seems like sitting there, calm. So he says to Kadosh Baruch Hu, please open his eyes that he should see. Open his eyes that he should see. And all of a sudden, HaKadosh Baruch Hu opens Gehazi's eyes. He looks around the mountain, and surrounding the mountain is an army. Is an army of chariots of fire and malachim of fire. They ain't touching Elisha Navi. And they were there. They were there. It's just that normally we can't see them. But they're there. So Rabbi Zeman Uziel, he was learning. They were literally malachim that came to hear the words of Torah that came out of his mouth. And their presence was there, and the bird would burn up. There are other interpretations in addition to Rashi. It had to do with going back to Kabbalah Satira. There was a Hashra Sashkina. I don't know. But there's also something interesting. So they want to know, okay, but listen, this was the Talmud. The Talmud, what about the Rebbe? When Hillel HaZaken was learning Nuvas, what was by him when he was learning? So, the Ritva Kosta Yerushalmi, it says that was the Madrega of Yonatan ben Uziel by the Rebbe Hillel HaZaken, even outside of Dalet Amos, the birds were burning up. But there's a vort from the Kutzker Rebbe, which is in the exact opposite direction. The Kutzker Rebbe says by the Rebbe, none of the birds burnt up. By the Rebbe, none of the birds burnt up. Which is a different idea, which is that sometimes you have a Talmud and he's so on fire that you get near him and you almost get burned because the Torah is just like all over the place and you can't even like calm it down. You ever been by somebody that has like so much in him? He's like spitting it out. It's like rapid fire. You can't even take it in. There's just so much. You kind of like give up. You just kind of say like, he's awesome. What did he say? I don't know. You know what I mean? By the Rebbe. Rebbe had the capacity to somehow control it all and be able to package it and give it over in a way where it can therefore be presented to the next person, to the next generation. Rebbe Yitzchak Meberdichev says, if you take a look at the top of the Arun, of course, was the place of communication between the Kaddish Baruch Hu and our world. V'edibarati t'chamei ala kapoires. So the Kaddish Baruch Hu says in Parshas Truma, I'm going to speak to you from on top of the kapoires, between the kruvim. So Rebbe Yitzchak says, if you look at the kruvim, what do they look like? What were their faces? Like children. We learned this in the Gemara Sukkah earlier in the Masechta. They looked like children. Kravya means children in Aramaic. So why children? So he says, and if you take a look in Chazal, one represents a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and one represents Klal Yisrael, right? And when Klal Yisrael is doing the Ratzon Shel Makom, what happens with the Kruvim?
Face each other.
How could it be? Because one represents a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and one represents Klal Yisrael. So wait a minute. Why does a Kaddish Baruch Hu's face look the same as the baby of Klal Yisrael? Right, yes. And he says in an educational sense, because that's where Kaddish Baruch Hu communicated with us, that's also a lesson in education. And in order to give over information, you have to lower yourself to the level of the Talmud. You have to be able to lower yourself and present it and package it in a way where the Talmud can accept it. In the words of Shlomo HaMelech, as expressed by the Rambam, let's bring the Rambam back into it for a moment. In the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam writes, that when Shlomo HaMelech says, you know what a good word is? It's like a silver basket with golden apples. Right. Got that? Silver basket with golden apples is a word well spoken. There's a proverb for you from Mishlei, from Shlomo HaMelech. What does it mean? It says the Halakha Rambam, because a basket is something where it's like woven, like a wicker basket. You know, you can like see a little bit inside, but you can't see what's in it. So if a good Rebbe, what he does is he presents the package in a way, the package itself is beautiful. It's a basket made out of silver. Silver is not the most precious, but it's very precious, very special. But you can see there's gold inside. You don't know what it is because you're not ready for it. It can't be given to you yet. But he's giving you a basket, a silver basket. There are golden eggs on the inside. You'll get to them eventually, and you can see already that they're there, and it pulls you forward until eventually you're ready to be able to take the eggs out of the basket. But in any case, that's the Kutzker Rebbe's word, that by the Rebbe, nothing was burnt up. Nothing was. He was able to harness all of that and package it and give it over to the next generation. Okay, but in any case, so that's that. Mishnah. Misha Hayarosh Ruba Sukkah. We've learned this before. A person whose head and most of his body is in the Sukkah, Shulchan Bezerabayas, but his table's in the house. Remember this Mishnah? The Gemara had two ways to learn it. Are we talking about actually sitting in this way? Or are we talking about a gzeira? What exactly are we talking about? Are we talking about the two ways to look at it? Is this something to do with the size of the Sukkah or the manner in which a person eats? Is it that the Sukkah has to be large enough to fit a table? Where it has to be that a person has to eat in a way where his table is in the sukkah and his table is not in the house. And the Gemara said, Chasur mechashev achi katani, the Mishnah is actually missing a line. It actually refers to both cases. That was both a machlokas v'hilma shamai. But just to read it the way we have it here, a person who seems to be sitting in a manner in which his head and most of his body is in the sukkah, but his table is inside the house. Beishamai poislin. Beishamai says puzzle. Remember, that was the proof that there has to be something missing in the Mishnah. Because you can't say something's puzzle. It's not puzzle the way he sits. You have to say eino yoitze. He's not yoitze the way he's sitting. You can't say it's puzzle. It's puzzle talking about an object, the cheftza. So are we talking about the object of the sukkah or the way in which he's sitting? The answer is both. Ubeisil machshir. Beisil says kasha. Amr lohem Beisil Beishamai. Beisil said to Beishamai, Lekachai amaisa. Wasn't that exactly the incident? Shehochu zikne Beishamai v'zikne Beisilel. The elders of Beishamai and Beisil went levaker Rabbi Yochanan ben Achironis to visit Rabbi Yochanan ben Achironis when he was sick. U'mitzo'uhu shahaya yoshev. And they found him that he was sitting roishoy v'ruboy besukkah. His head and most of his body was in the sukkah. V'shulchanoy v'seichabayis. But his table was in the house. And they didn't say a word to him. Beishamai said back to Beisil, Misham Raya? That's your proof from there. Afhem Amrulai. They said to him, Imkein Hayisa Noyeg, if that was your general minig, Loi Kiyamta Mitzvah Sukkah Miyamecha, you've never fulfilled the mitzvah of Sukkah in your life. Now we should get into a real conversation. How could they say that? It's all, at worst, it's an Isser Derabbanan. Unless they meant that there's the dimensions of the sukkah, that the dimensions of the sukkah couldn't hold the table. Okay, then maybe the dimensions, Beishamai would argue, is actually a Din Deraisa. So we'd have to get involved in that. Noshim Avonim Uketanim, women and slaves and children, Peturim Min HaSukkah, are exempt from sukkah. Why? Why do you think? Mitzvah Shazman Groma, right? That's what I would have thought. Katan she'enet sarich le'imoy. A katan, and wait, does that apply to katan? Katanim are not chayv mitzvah Shazman Groma?
Until the age of...
So why are they included in this category? The answer is because they're always thrown together. Nashim, Avadim, and Katan are always thrown together. But they're not for the same reasons. Nashim and Avadim are mitzvah Shazman Groma. But the katan is because he's a katan. He's not chayv in mitzvahs. He's not chayv in any mitzvahs. There's chinuch. Interesting discussion. Is there an obligation of chinuch on the child at all? Or only on the parents? Or the father? But, be that as it may, the Mishnah says, katan she'ena tzarech le'imoy, a katan that no longer needs his mother, chayav b'sukkah, is obligated in sukkah. Now, of course, it can't mean d'oraisa is obligated in sukkah, but at least he's of the age of chinuch when you can start to educate him because he doesn't need his mother anymore so he can sleep in the sukkah. There was an incident, and the daughter-in-law of Shammai the elder gave birth. Mazel tov. So he removed the covering, meaning the roof, In other words, in the kid's room, he took off the roof. He took off the plaster. And he put schach down on the beams on top of the kid's bed, you know, on top of the crib. Bishvil katan, for that katan. So apparently he disagreed with the age of chinuch or something over here, because apparently, I don't know, since it's a mitzvah, we don't have to do anything. Right? We discussed this a few times. The mitzvah sukkah is the mitzvah just to live in it. You don't really even have to have any kavanah, really. There's a little bit of a discussion about that. But really, the whole point is just eating. You're just sleeping. So if that's all you have to do, why can't the baby do that? Well, the answer is the baby doesn't know he's doing anything. So how could you speak about chinuch by a baby? You have to. It's chinuch means education. So if he's not learning anything, what's the point? So that's a good question. But that's what Shammai did. So let's start the Gemara. Minane mile. How do you know this? What's this? Who wants to take a guess? Well, let's see what the answer is. We can figure out what the question was. How do you know this? Detana Rabbana. As we are taught, Ezrach, ze Ezrach. Ha Ezrach, if there's a hay in front of Edward Ezrach, Lahaitzi Yasan Hashem, excludes women. Okay, so apparently we're asking why, how do you know, Nashim, Avadim, Kitanim are exempt from Sukkah. So how do you know they're exempt? So what did we say? Because it's the mitzvah Asay Shas on Grama. What does the Gemara say? Because the Pasuk says, Kol HaEzrach BeYisrael, all of the guests, with the Hey HaYidiyah, all of the guests in Yisrael, Yesh BeSukkahs, should sit in a Sukkah. So had it only said Ezrach, it would have meant everybody. But HaEzrach means this one, the Ezrach, which apparently excludes somebody. Well, who is it excluding? Women. But it says Kol HaEzrach BeYisrael. Kol means all. All means everybody's included. HaEzrach means only this specific person. So how can you have an exclusion and also an inclusion? Kol L'Rabba Sesa Ketani. All includes Ketanim. What? Seriously? So you're going to tell me that Ketanim are Chayav D'Oraisa and Sukkah because of Kol? And women, who in any case should have been exempt because it's a mitzvah Asay Shazan Grama, are excluded because of the Heya Yediyah and HaEzrach? What is going on over here? Amar Mar, the master said HaEzrach L'Haitziyas HaNashem. He said that the Hey and HaEzrach excludes women. L'Meimra, the Ezrach B'Nashem and Gavri Mashma. Which implies, which is to say, that the word Ezrach without a hey means whether it's women or whether it's men. That's what's mashma, what's implied. V'hatanya. So far that would mean that Ezrach means men and women. That's all the Gemara wants to say so far. So you told me that Ezrach excludes women, which means Ezrach would have included women. So what? V'hatanya, but didn't we learn in a braisa? HaEzrach l'Rabbi says Anashim. That there's another pasuk that says HaEzrach includes women. What's this talking about? So it says, regarding Yom Kippur, if you have a fancy Gemara, you have it on the side. This will be for you a law in the seventh month, which is... Seventh month, anybody know? Well, it depends. If you're talking about Achodesh Azalachem Rosh Chodesh, and that's where the Torah looks at it, the first month is Nisan. What's the seventh month after Nisan? Good, Tishrei. Ba'asor l'chodesh, on the 10th of Tishrei, ta'anu es nafshay seichem, you shall afflict your souls. V'chom malacha lo yisazu, and you're not allowed to do any malacha. Who? Ha'ezrach. The Ezrach. V'hager hagar b'seichem. And the converts as well. So wait, so who's Ha'ezrach? Says the Gemara of Abraisa that says, in that case of Yom Kippur, Ha'ezrach includes l'rabois, includes es anashim, the women. What? Ha'ezrachiyos, the female guests or women of Klal Yisrael, shechayavos be'inui, they're obligated in all of the afflictions of Yom Kippur. So that's the end of the braisa. So now we have a contradiction, because on the one hand we're talking about Sukkah, we said that women are excluded because of Ha'ezrach, and on Yom Kippur they're included because of Ha'ezrach. So that's a direct contradiction. You can't have it both ways. Alma, you see from here, Ezrach. Gavri mashma, that the word Ezrach only implies men. And HaEzrach apparently includes women. So Sukkah also should have included women. Amar Rabba, Hilchas Aninu, Vasmechinu Rabbanon Akroi. You're right, it's Halacha L'Moshe Mi Sinai, and the Rabbanon just pinned it on a pasuk. What do you think he means? Pinned, which one's halacha and they pinned it on a pasuk? Sukkis or Yom Kippur? The exclusion of women or the inclusion of women on Yom Kippur? So, Mistama, the inclusion of women on Yom Kippur, right? That halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, we know that even though Yom Kippur is a mitzvah, asher shazman grama. Is it true? Asher lo sase.
What is?
Afflicting ourselves on Yom Kippur. So the pasuk presents it in the positive. Ti'anuish nafshar seichem means afflict yourselves. That's a positive or negative? Positive, do something. Oh, Mrs. Asay Shazman Grama, Nashim Peturos. Oh, no. There's a halacha moshe Sinai, women are obligated. So, fine, women are obligated. You can see it in the pasuk because it's a little extra hay. We need the hay for. That includes women. That's called an asmachta. It's not really what the pasuk meant. It's not really learned out from the pasuk. It's halacha moshe Sinai, but so we don't forget it, or maybe it's a little bit hinted to maybe in the pasuk. So that hey is there to remind us that women are obligated, even though you might have understood it as a mitzvah asay shazman grama. Haikra v'hayhilchasa. Wait, which one is the pasuk and which one's halacha moshe Sinai? The hey, wait, I'm confused now. So how do you? Which one gets to be the halacha and which one? Which one's the default and which one's the chiddush? V'su, and furthermore. Krolamali, hilchasalamali. What do you need a pasuk for? What do you need halacha moshe Sinai for? Hasukkah mitzvah asay shazman grama. At the end of the day, sukkah is a mitzvah asay shazman grama, right? V'chol mitzvah asay shazman grama nashim peturos, and women are exempt. So, if you're going to say that the word Ezra really means man, the hay is really not necessary to teach you women are included, because that's really halacha moshe Sinai. Okay. So by Sukkah it says Ha Ezrach, so that means women are excluded, because the Hey meant women are excluded because it's only the Ezrach that's Chayav, and therefore women are exempt. What? And then the Halacha, you don't need it. You don't need it to exclude women because we know women are excluded because it's a Mitzvah Shazman Grama. What is going on over here? Yom HaKippurim, Mid Rav Yehuda Marav Nafka. And Yom Kippur we would know without Halacha Moshe Sinai from Rabbi Yehuda Amarav. We learn it out. How do you know? Dam Rabbi Yehuda Amarav. V'chein Tana Dever Rabbi Shmuel Amar Kra. The pasuk says, we're going to finish with this, Ish, a Isha, a man or woman who does any of these averos gets punished. So that's a pasuk. Pasuk says that men and women are the same when it comes to punishments. Hishave HaKasuv Ish Al Ish V'chol Oinshin Sheba Torah. Men and women are equal in all punishments of the Torah. And therefore, anything which their mitzvah los, I say, I don't know, I have to figure out how far this goes, but they should have been included, apparently, in Yom Kippur because of the principle that, well, there's a severe punishment for it. It's not a mitzvah asay. It's a negative because you're not allowed to do something and it comes with a heavy-duty punishment. And therefore, men and women should have been equal. So, what do you need halacha l'moshe Sinai for at all? So, okay, we'll have to chazer the kasha tomorrow, but we'll come back to it b'li neder tomorrow on the topic of some of these. But now it's time to party. We're going to the gym. So, chagiga, everyone, please come along at least for the beginning, so we can all enjoy Chanukah together.
Oh, man. It's a busy day today.